Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Power Up and Game. This is episode 15, and unlike our last couple of episodes, we have a special someone who decided to rejoin us. Riley is here. Hi, Riley. How's it going?
Hey, it's going good. I'm glad to be back here to talk about some cool stuff.
And enjoyed your vacation?
Yeah. I don't know if it was so much of a vacation. I mean, you know, we recorded some stuff that didn't make it out, like the Clash at the Stash episode we recorded, but, you know, that's okay. That happens.
It's been a little while since everybody got to hear you. And we're also here with another guest who might as well just be a mainstay of this show by now, Taylor. Taylor, how's it going?
I am doing pretty damn good between just some issues. Getting some stuff out, like Riley kind of mentioned. Clash of the Stash will be out eventually. Still working on getting everything fixed with it. Also, kind of weird. It was a bad time to kind of also have like a mini burnout of everything and not realizing it until you're kind of out of that burnout. So I'm feeling a lot better than I felt the past few weeks. I don't even know if it really reflected that way in the episodes. To where I kind of feel like I was more of an, I don't even want to say an asshole, but just more depressing the past few weeks. So it's good to kind of be out of that rut I felt like I was in. So that's great. We got some good stuff to talk about too, all things considered.
Yeah, it's good to hear that you were doing all right. But on our docket today, God of War Ragnarok finally getting a November release date. Also, Rockstar is reportedly focusing on GTA 6 instead of GTA 4 and Red Dead Redemption 1 remasters. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy writer Mary DeMarl, I hope I said that right, is joining BioWare to work as the senior narrative director on the next Mass Effect title. E3 is returning in 2023 with a brand new partner, ReadPop, the organization that runs PAX amongst other big-name conventions. And our main topic, we'll discuss Ubisoft's Skull and Bones presentation. We got some new footage and November 2022 release date. So let's go ahead and jump right into it, because something we got a lot to say in this episode. So for our stories of the week, God of War Ragnarok finally gets a release date. Santa Monica Studios revealed that God of War Ragnarok will be released on November 9th, 2022 via PS4 and PS5. Along with the release date news, the studio also dropped a new cinematic trailer for the game. There's been a lot of wild speculation online about when we would get a release date announcement, and sadly, some, and that's a key word there, of that speculation turned to backlash at the lack of news. And that backlash led to developer Santa Monica Studios putting out a statement about online toxicity surrounding God of War Ragnarok. Last week on the podcast, Taylor and I talked about social media, online toxicity, so we won't harp on it again because that's a bit repetitive. But with that said, Riley, since you weren't here, do you have any thoughts on the subject?
Yeah, I mean, online harassment is never okay. In terms of the release date for the game, that's pretty exciting news. I mean, I am not as excited for God of War Ragnarok as other people are, but ooh. I am glad that a release date has been announced.
Well, first all right. Off, Riley, boo as well. Boo to you.
But, boo that woman, boo.
What's going to, I want to just talk about this real quick with the Santa Monica Studio thing. Just to recap what Michael and I basically were saying last week, we didn't harp on it too much, I don't think, but our basic gist was, hey, you know, it's fine to say something is not good or is something great, just don't personally, you know, attack people and send death threats. That's fucking crazy, you know? So I think it's kind of sad that it got brought up again here. I actually sent this to Michael right after we got done recording that last week's episode, and I was like, man, I'm glad that we did bring up the subject, though, because it was a big thing in the gaming industry last week. So, in terms of the game announcement, the release day, I'm glad we got it. I know there was a lot of speculation around, is it going to release this year? I'm glad it is. I'm really hyped for this game, though. This sounds like it's going to be one hell of a game. I love the first one, or I guess The fourth one?
it was kind of like a soft reboot. So yeah. It counts as the first one.
Yeah, so it's either the second one or the fourth, fifth one. You know, I'm just going to call this Ragnarok. So I'm excited for Ragnarok. Can't wait to see it. Hopefully it's a Game of the Year worthy title like its predecessor. And that's pretty much it for me.
I'm interested in seeing Game of the Year debates now that this is pretty much confirmed for this year.
Well, don't worry, Riley. I'm sure God of War won't touch your precious Elden Ring.
Well,
yeah, go ahead, Taylor.
I was going to say, oh yeah, I'm sure these debates are going to get crazy too online. Not at all. I can't imagine the internet having something to say in a potential Elden Ring versus God of War debate. I'm sure it's going to be very civil, and it's not going to devolve into a bunch of name-calling. I'm sure that's the case.
I think the problem for me in that case is Elden Ring didn't quite turn out to be as great as I wanted it to be. and I didn't like God of War either, so, like, the first one, so I'm out of the race in this one. No doubt Elden Ring will be in my top 10, but will it be number one? No, probably not, no.
Welcome back to the show, Riley. We're booing you on the first
one. Yeah. Look, I can take the heat. It's fine.
For me, it's still Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Shredder's Revenge. That's my game of the year so far.
I still haven't played
that. That's not a bad... It really isn't a bad pick. That game's tremendous.
It is great.
I gotta check it out. Good.
It's definitely nostalgia that's hitting hard with that one, but it holds up. So I think that's what works for me. But for me, I'm excited for Ragnarok. I've been waiting for this one for a while. I was one of those people who were scared that Ragnarok's going to get pushed back to a 2023 release date. Because usually Sony, I mean, they don't really push out a whole lot when it comes to their games until like they know they're going to release the game that year. Or at least within that fiasco, financial quarter. And so to see so little about God of War Ragnarok, but instead seeing them tease that, hey, we're still working on this, kind of got me iffy. It had me thinking that we were going to get one of those scary wall of text that explains that they're pushing the game back that we've been seeing so often with games these days. But I'm excited that Ragnarok is finally coming out. I can't wait to continue the story of Kratos. Although I gotta ask, Riley, what was it about the game that didn't hold your interest? Like, I'm not saying that it should. Like, not every game is gonna like be for everybody. But I'm wondering, since you and I do enjoy the storytelling aspect of games, I'm wondering what was it about the game that didn't capture you?
Yeah. So to be fair, I wouldn't say the game didn't capture me. It just didn't capture me enough to finish it.
So why, Riley? Why did you hate this game?
Well, the story I always tell actually is it's not really fair to the game, but this is what happened. I had just finished playing Breath of the Wild right before I went into that game, and jumping from Breath of the Wild, where like your freedom is so high, you can basically go anywhere and do, you know, you can climb on anything, do whatever, to going to Ragnarok, or not Ragnarok, the original, you know, God of War 2018, and it's like, that's much more arena-based, where you're going from, like, one area to the next, and also the heaviness of the combat didn't really appeal to me, so, yeah. And the story aspect, I don't know, that didn't really do anything for me. I thought it was cool what they did with Kratos and evolving his character, but as far as the story of the game itself, it didn't really hold my interest that much at the time.
I do get what Riley's saying, especially since she said she was coming out of Breath of the Wild to God of War, and fuck, that's a tone shift.
It really is.
Like, both look breathtaking, but in such a different way. So it's just going from this like pleasant to look at beautiful landscape to this epic gods are among us kind of feeling, to where it's just also a little depressing, because, you know,
yeah.
So this is the kind of thing that really drew me to this game a lot, and I think I've mentioned this every time we talk about God of War, but it's the thing I want to bring up about it because I love it so much, is that this is just a game with all these gods and mythology and all this epicness. It is. It does feel like an epic game, but you can really just strip all that down and it being just this really human tale about a father trying to connect with his son and trying to spread the ashes of his late wife on a mountaintop.
Yeah, and in a way he tried to repent for his past.
Yeah. It's just very beautiful in that aspect to me. But I can understand it not clicking. Everybody's different. It's subjective. It's gaming.
Yeah. So, Riley, actually, I'm going to tell you something. I didn't actually play God of War when it launched. It took a couple of years before I actually played it. So I didn't play it right away, despite the point that I do love God of War.
I have been thinking about going back to it, especially because it's free for... if you have a PS5
the collection.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Oh yeah, it is. Oh yeah, I definitely recommend trying it out then.
It's also on PC.
Mm-hmm. And it's on PC, true. Yeah. And some of the mods they have for that game is already just, they have one with the Simpsons, but that's whatever. It's Homer and Bart.
I would play the hell out of that. Homer and Bart going up a mountain.
Yeah, sign me up for that. I love that idea.
Homer being Kratos, yeah. Rockstar is reportedly focusing on Grand Theft Auto 6 instead of Grand Theft Auto 4 and Red Dead Redemption 1 remasters. And let's face it, Red Dead Online is already dead and gone. And yeah, at first... as first reported by Rockstar Gaming Insider, Tez 2, remasters of GTA 4 and Red Dead Redemption 1 were on the table a few years ago, but Rockstar chose not to proceed with the projects in mind. The poor reception of the trilogy Definitive Edition might be a reason behind that decision. No, it definitely is. Oh my goodness. Kotaku would later confirm this report, adding that Rockstar is focusing on developing GTA 6. And has shelved all remakes following the GTA trilogy remasters being so poorly received. Although GTA 6 appears to be Rockstar's number one priority right now, Kotaku was told that remasters of Red Dead Redemption 1 and GTA 4 could still happen down the line. So, Riley, Taylor, is this a good move from Rockstar?
Yeah, I think it's a good move to focus their attention on GTA 6. The thing that doesn't quite make a lot of sense with this story, to me at least, is it seemed like they had a lot of intention to remake a bunch of their games, right? And they started with the GTA trilogy. But the problem is that they didn't put any effort into it. So why make this whole plan to... remake a bunch of your most popular games if you're not going to put any, or at least remaster them, right? Not necessarily remake, but why would you make that whole plan? And then, you know, you're Rockstar, you have the resources to do it properly. So I'm interested in what happened there and why, you know, why there was this whole plan in place and it kind of fell apart. But
actually, where Riley, I can answer a little bit of that for you.
Please.
So these are reports that came out that people have been finding out. I forget the name of the company that Rockstar hired. It wasn't Rockstar themselves who did it. They had an outside company, a third-party company, do the definitive editions for the Grand Theft Auto trilogy. The problem is, when it came to that third-party company, they were given a very small window to do a trilogy, which, you know, why Rockstar would do that, I have no idea. You could definitely take your time and release the game one by one by one. But they wanted all three games out at once. So the third party company, which I'm going to have to look that up. I forget their name. They actually use a lot of AI scaling and resolution to try to bump up resolutions and pixel counts on the game itself. And that's why the rain effects looks kind of weird, because nothing is actually properly implemented. Most of the stuff that we saw was AI generated. Like, the actual developers didn't really get a chance to do it by hand they probably should have.
Yeah, that makes total sense then. But I think where Rockstar is now, you know, focusing on GTA 6 is Well, I'm hesitant to say that it's the right decision because GTA 5 is still going strong, but like GTA Online, right? But I definitely want a GTA 6. I'm excited to see what that looks like. A little hesitant to see what that looks like actually after GTA Online dominated, you know, and continues to dominate so heavily. I hope there will be a story to GTA 6, a single player story. We'll see.
Well, I think they will have a story because that is Rockstar's like bread and butter right there. That's definitely their top franchise. So I don't think they would do only online because they could have done that if they wanted. It could have just been Grand Theft Auto Online separate. But I think with 6, we will get a proper like Grand Theft Auto-esque story. Also, Riley, it was Grove Street Games that helped development with Definitive Edition.
Interesting. I think GTA Online, just to kind of add to what you said, Michael, I think it is separate now. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm interested to see what GTA 6, first of all, what it looks like, and second of all, how the, because inevitably that's going to come with its own online kind of ecosystem, oh, yeah. I would imagine. So how is that going to integrate into what is already GTA Online? I don't know, but
I mean, hey, they definitely moved from Grand Theft Auto 5 being from the PS360 area to the PlayStation Xbox One era to current era.
No, so, I think what I more mean is, Overwatch situation where it's like,
no, that's what I'm saying. Like they've gotten so good at like porting these things over to the next generation. I think they could actually do it with 6 and like make it to where it's still the same game that you were playing before, but now like GTA 6 aesthetics with it, maybe.
Mm, yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, I guess, yeah, I think it's the right decision.
Taylor, what about you? What do you think of this whole situation?
So first off, got a pretty bad storm going on right now. My lights just flickered, so it's my power might go out or somebody's trying to contact me through the Upside Down. So we'll figure out what that is pretty soon. Don't know what would happen if it is the Upside Down thing, so I might go missing. In regards to this story, though, you guys brought up some very good points. Starting with, is this the right move? Definitely. 100%. I wish I could go higher. The trilogy, I remember when that definitive trilogy first released, and I played probably 5 to 10 minutes of San Andreas, and then I came to go record this podcast, and I remember us talking about it and the just terrible reception of the game. And I just said, I was like, yeah, I played about 5-10 minutes. I don't really know what all the fuss is about right now. And, you know, I played a little more and I kind of got what all the fuss was about. So I get it. I get why it's so poorly received. When it comes to all hands on deck for GTA 6, I did see like a Rockstar post still updating GTA Online. They're still making minimal updates, it appears, to Red Dead Redemption Online. It was kind of funny. I was skimming through that Red Dead Online and GTA Online post. I was like, alright, that's pretty cool for GTA. Pretty cool. What's Red Dead get? Oh. Well.
Yeah, they definitely got like the Skeleton Crew on Red Dead Online.
Which is sad, because there's a lot of players there who even request things. Like, they're giving Rockstar great ideas on how to improve Red Dead Online, and it's just not happening. But with GTA 6, all hands on deck there, I think that's a great idea, because every time anything Rockstar related happens in the news, every single comment, every single conversation turns to, when's GTA 6 coming out? And I get the reservations Riley has about it too, about how online focused is this Grand Theft Auto going to be? Or is it going to be a multi-city thing? Is it going to be... Remember Tom Henderson, Gaming Insider Tom Henderson, had a report months ago about it being an ever-evolving map as well. What exactly would that look like? What is the single player going to look like? Because GTA, throughout the years, especially GTA 4 and 5 and San Andreas, to me, I really love those stories a lot. Is Rockstar going to pull a bit back on that, or are they committed to doing both? You know what I mean? Like they did with GTA 5. Committed to giving you a great story and also giving you some online that's fun to play. So I'm hoping they're doing that with GTA 6, but all in all, going back to this story, great move for Rockstar, in my opinion. Exactly what they should be doing.
All right. So, Riley, Taylor, just a quick little trivia question for you all. Do you know the year? Or we're not going to talk about the day, but do you know the year Grand Theft Auto 5 came out?
2013.
Goodness, forget both of y'all. You know, I was trying to have fun with
September
that.
2013.
Y'all want to be smart and whatnot.
Nearly 10 years, which is crazy to think about.
10 years. You know, and there's a lot of games that talk about like, oh, yeah, we're going on a 10-year life service deal. And Rockstar was like, all right, we're just going to make a game and online. If it's online, it's going to keep supporting.
And they
online.
Made it 10 years. They're the only game to make it 10
years. Like, geez, even Bungie kind of like stopped.
Destiny's getting there.
Yeah, Destiny's supposed to be a 10-year deal, and they're just like, screw that. We're just going to stick with Destiny 2. Oh, what about 3? Yeah, no. We're going to stick with Destiny 2 and just make DLC for that.
We'll get the 10 years, damn it.
But yeah, that was supposed to be a 10-year deal with
Activision. I guess, yeah, technically Destiny doesn't fit because they released a separate game. Mm-hmm. So I'll concede that.
Hey, they're getting close with Destiny 2. What is Destiny 2? 2017?
Yeah.
They've gotten so, about halfway there. Not
that's
bad.
That's crazy. What the fuck?
Yeah. And there's true. But hey, at least they're supporting with DLC, like story-based DLC. So I'll give them that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's another thing. I don't want to tie this back to GTA. That's another concern I have. I don't think Rockstar is going to do it, but it's still a concern that they're going to add more story stuff after the fact. And that's never really a bad thing. Look at Undead Nightmare, for example, for Red Dead 1. But what I'm kind of thinking is a shorter GTA 6 story, and then they add more stuff post-launch, which is something I don't really want. But I could see Rockstar doing, even though I don't think they're going to do it. That sounds very complicated, but I think you both know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's like, but I was hoping they would do that with GTA 5 because, you know, they had like Battle of Gay Tony and what was it? Bikers of the Damned or something like that.
Lost and Damned.
Yeah, Lost and Damned. You know, I liked those. I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. It's not the main characters from the game, but it's still story set around that city and around that era. It's like, okay, this is kind of cool, especially Battle of Gay Tony. Like, it was a cool tone shift, and it wasn't too long to where it felt like I had to play the game. But it felt like, yeah, it's a cool DLC.
And all tied together, too. 5.
But yeah, like, they all tied together.
All three main characters converged at one part in their own stories, which I thought was pretty cool. Whereas, like, GTA 5, I think there was plans, or there was rumors, at least, of, what was it, like a Christmas DLC? Checking in all three characters after the story. But
Trevor would definitely do a Christmas special.
That would be great. I think also, especially after all these years, I wonder if Rockstar likes the fact that they haven't made any of their endings canon yet, which I think is a little ridiculous, because I think thematically for that game, the only one that works is Death Wish. But that's just me. So I don't know if that's necessarily something Rockstar also thinks, like, oh, no, we're just, why should we have actual story DLC that's not GTA Online for Franklin and Lamar? Who are the only two characters pretty much confirmed to survive in any of the endings. So.
Yeah, and speaking of stories, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy writer Mary DeMarl, and I still hope I said that right, joins Mass Effect's narrative team. As originally reported by VGC, Mary DeMarl, I really do hope I'm saying that right, has joined BioWare. As noted in VGC's article, DeMarl has quite a resume. She created the story and led the writing team for Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, and led the narrative team in the recent Deus Ex games, Human Revolution and Mankind Divided. I love those. Oh, man. BioWare project director Michael Gamble would later confirm the news via Twitter, stating, quote, I'm really excited to let you know that Mary DeMarl will be joining the Mass Effect team as Senior Narrative Director. You've seen her work in Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy and Deus Ex, to name a few. She's amazing. End quote. What are your thoughts on this one, Taylor?
First off, be sure to, if you want to learn more about any of the stories that we cover, we have links for all of those in the description of this episode. Michael's actually named off or quoted a few things from a few of the articles, so be sure to give them a click. In terms of this story, I love it. I really love Guardians of the Galaxy. It's one of my favorite games. As we talked about a few weeks ago, it's one of my favorite games visually, and narratively, it's almost at the top of the list as well. I love the story they told. And honestly, as much as I love the MCU versions, I kind of like the video game versions more. So to have the person who led the writing team for that game and made them so lovable, and having her work on this new Mass Effect, it is exactly what I think this game needs, what the franchise needs, especially after something like Mass Effect Andromeda. To where I think one of the big things about Andromeda, other than, of course, my face is tired and all that stuff, all the memes, is there's not many characters for you to latch on to. You know, there's no Garrus, there's no Rex, there's no just lovable characters that you just can't live without. So yeah,
and I think that was one of the things about Andromeda. Like, there was no making replaceable characters for those. Like,
even I don't think anybody was terrible. It's just, you know, they're all right. You know?
Yeah.
Everybody was about at a 5.
And that's the thing. They feel like NPCs.
Yeah, which, I mean, they are. But still.
Well, I mean, like.
But still, I know what you mean, though, by that. There's no, they don't feel like a companion. They don't feel like a friend. In those Mass Effect games, that's what you want your squad mates to feel like. Like, oh, I got to make sure that I level them up. I talk to them after every mission. I want to learn about their backstories. All this stuff. And having Mary DeMarl join the Mass Effect narrative team here, with the resume she has, and especially that Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy game. Oh, that's a good get. That made me feel really good about this game right now.
Oh, yeah, that definitely calmed some quarrels I had with the new Mass Effect is coming. Because as I alluded to earlier, Deus Ex, Mankind, and Human Revolution, those are the two games that got me to Deus Ex games. And I actually love those, and I'm still upset with Square not letting them finish their game. That still makes me so mad. But yeah, I didn't know she was part of the writing team for that game. So that makes me even more excited, because like, oh, so she knows about sci-fi and how to write cool characters. Yeah. And how to build cool worlds. So I'm definitely excited for that one. And we didn't mention it, but she's also an award-winning writer. She won awards for Guardians of the Galaxy. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. So Riley, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no real thoughts except to, yeah, it wow. Seems like a good get.
Riley, we're over here hyping her up. I'm like, oh man, this is so cool. And then you're like, yeah.
Well, to be fair. To be fair, it's been pretty well known on this podcast that Riley has not played the Mass Effect game so far, so I can kind of understand.
Yeah, that's, or the Deus Ex games. I have played the Guardians of the Galaxy game. I thought the writing in that was very good, so I have something to latch on to with this story, but.
And one thing, I know Riley, you haven't played Mass Effect franchise yet, and at some point, we're going to get you to play that franchise. Some point we will.
I have played the first game a little bit.
Wait, Riley, you have Game Pass, right?
I do.
Yeah, they have the Legendary Edition, so you get all the DLC and all the games and the most bootimous.
Okay, so here's the question, though. Rate. Here's the question. Do I just start with 2?
I would say play 1. Even I'm not the biggest fan of Part 1 as much as I love it, but in Part 2, you can't get the best ending unless you either have beaten 1 or you play through 2 twice. So I would much rather play through one and then play through the much better two and get a great ending.
Well, my problem is, like, I have just, like, I don't want to go back and play one. Like, I played it when it first came out, and I was like, this is not my favorite. Now, to be fair, that was years and years and years ago, so fair. Maybe, you know.
I will say this, Riley. The elevator scene is better, because that was the most infamous thing for a lot of players. Was sure. That daggone elevator in the Citadel that took forever because it was loading.
Yeah. My problem, which, like, I think a lot of people talked about, was, like, the shooting in one, like, was not great. But I might have also just been a dumb kid and, like, not really known, like, how to do it right.
No, Riley, it wasn't just you being a dumb kid. No, the shooting mechanics is not very good Mass Effect 1.
So, one thing I will say, though, is in the Legendary Edition, Mass Effect 1 is much improved. I am very impressed with BioWare, with how much they improved Mass Effect 1 across the board. I still don't think the shooting is, you know, as good as the other ones, but it's also improved as well to me. The visuals, the loading screens, all that stuff, so I think if you went back to play one, you'd probably have a much better time. Don't know if you would still enjoy it, but it's definitely better than OG.
It's definitely something you're gonna play for the story, because gameplay itself, that part I totally agree with you, Riley. Is the first one is kind of hard to go back and play because it really wasn't that good at first. But we latched onto it because the game looked cool, the story was great, and the characters were great.
And once you, to me, like, I think I had the perfect, for me, my Shepard story in Mass Effect 1. Towards now, if I ever go back and play it, I actually started Mass Effect 2. Because I already played through all the side missions, and I got everything the way I just want it in Mass Effect 1. And all the deviations I'd want to do are in 2 and 3. Sure. To tie all this back, though, so we can tie this whole story up into a bow, I really love this hiring, though, of DeMarle, because you look at Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. All three of us have played or seen that game, and you look at the depths of all the Guardians, and they all go through an arc, and they all have this bond by the end, and you really buy into it. I would love to see something like that with the next Mass Effect. All those, your squad mate missions and building those relationships, if you could even improve that, I'd be impressed.
Well, she's only writing the story. Well, I don't know who's leading the actual, like, combat mechanics and that's what the build.
Oh, I know. I'm saying in terms of character arcs and stuff like that. I think you could possibly improve upon that kind of thing for Mass Effect, and if she can manage to lead her team to improve on those aspects on top of having a great story, which, you know, you look at her resume and it's like, well, you know, that's covered.
Yeah, and we do know that she's willing to push her writers, because that's one thing she said in for Guardians of the Galaxy. She really pushed her writers to explore individual characters. And Mass Effect is known for having a pretty diverse cast of characters. So it's going to be interesting to hear how she's going to push this writing staff to really flesh out these alien species and the new Shepard, which isn't going to be a Shepard, but that's what I'm just going to say for now until we find out who the character is going to be.
I think it is going to be Shepard.
It can't be. It shouldn't be.
I think they're dragging that Shepard corpse back for that money. That money over there at EA and BioWare, and it's Shepard. That N7 armor is coming back.
Yeah, give us Shepard 2.0, but don't make it be like our old Shepard. Like, new universe, new world, new Shepard. Just come on, man. Don't do that. But speaking of coming back from the dead, E3 is coming back in 2023. The ESA has announced that E3 is coming back in 2023 as an in-person event at the LA Convention Center. Furthermore, PAX and Star Wars Celebration organizer Reed Pop will be partnering with the ESA to run the event. Oh boy. Riley, are you excited for E3 coming back? And what are your thoughts on Reed Pop getting a chance to produce the event for next year.
It's a little complicated. I can't say that I'm really excited for E3 to come back, because why should I be when we have Summer Games Fest and also the Game Awards at the end of the year? So that feels like... And also, just, you know, Nintendo Directs and PlayStation... whatever they call their Directs.
State of Plays and whatever.
So, like, it feels like news just comes out whenever companies want it to come out, so... I don't really understand the need for an event like E3. But ReadPop is a pretty good organization. They do PAX, Star Wars Celebration, but the one that I know them best for is New York Comic Con, which I've gone to a few times in the past. And yeah, they run a good show. I like New York Comic Con, so I have that tie with ReadPop. Kind of interested in that side of it, but it seems though that if they're getting ReadPop to produce it, they're going to be putting on kind of a different show, because it seems like the shows that ReadPop does are more enthusiast focused rather than news focused. I know stuff gets announced at Star Wars Celebration, and I'm not sure about PAX, but you know, it feels like at least the events that ReadPop puts on are more geared towards just general enthusiasm rather than geared towards news. So we'll see. We'll see.
Taylor, how about you? What are your thoughts on E3 coming back yet again, and this time under new production partnership?
You guys know when a TV show, usually a drama series, it goes on so long that characters will die and it'll come back, and it's just, death loses all stakes. It's kind of how I feel about E3 at this point. I don't know if it's coming back and it's going to survive. I don't know if it's going to, you know, thrive off of this new change. I don't know if it's going to be dead again in a year. Honestly, I just kind of have apathy about E3 right now. Until we get a great show from E3, which I can't tell you when we've gotten a fantastic show from E3. Seriously can't. I know that all these years here lately have been blending together, but I really can't tell you when the last great E3 was across the board. So, and just even as an event.
The last great E3 is when Naughty Dog came on stage and showed off Uncharted, and the game bugged out a little bit.
Froze, yeah. And didn't freeze, it just bugged out.
Yeah, it bugged out. It's like, yeah, it's actual gameplay. It's like, oh, okay, cool. No trickery. Cool. I think that was like the last E3, because I think that's like the last memorable live demo we've seen at E3. And that's what used to make E3 so cool. Was seeing those early gameplay demos. Now they're just like, oh yeah, it's on Twitter, YouTube, you can watch it. It's like, man, I miss hearing the developers being enthusiastic about their game. Like, oh my god, we finally can show this game off. Check this out. But me personally, I'm glad E3 is coming back. I've talked about my time at E3 once before and how terrible it was. And I still tell people that when people find out, like, oh, you do video game journalism, what have you done? Blah, blah, blah. And I told them I've been to E3. They're like, that's my dream. I'm like, yeah, that was mine too once upon a time until I lived it. And it's hell. It's terrible. It's over-organized. Well, under-organized, really. Overpopulated. And there was no leadership whatsoever. But with ReadPop involved now, I think it'll be far more under control than it was, at least the last time I was there. And Riley, I think you're right. They are more like spectacles rather than news. I think that's one of the good reasons about having ReadPop. It's like, hey, we know all these games are coming out. We already know that you know. It's going to get leaked, blah, blah, blah. Everybody's doing their own showcases. So how about instead you show those showcases where they're playable to the players? And, you know, they're going to have a lot of influencers there to hype everything up. And I think it really is going to turn into more of a marketing thing, but also like a fan focused thing, to where you do feel like it's about the gamers and not just about marking the next microtransaction field live service game. It's going to be a celebration of video games the way we always thought E3 was. And that's one thing I'm glad about Repop being involved. Because PAX is like that. I haven't been to PAX yet, but I've seen PAX. I've seen the enthusiasm people have for PAX, and it definitely is a fanfare. It's definitely for the fans, and I think that's what they're going to do with E3. I think it's going to be more for gamers. It's going to be, hey, instead of like, you have to win a contest to go to the Xbox Bethesda showcase, or hey, watch this digital event for PlayStation gamers. No, come on down. Look at these games. Look at these accessories. Buy some swag, you know. Make it a fan event. Make it to where you can meet other players and have a good time. It's not going to be just an expo. It's going to be a convention. I think it's going to be now a video game convention. And I'm really excited for that. And now I want to go back to E3 and see the kind of changes that Repop makes.
Now, the one thing I will say is when I said earlier about, like, I'm just apathetic about it, I'm not, like, opposed to E3 coming back. It's just... I want to see what that looks like. You know, it's one of those wait and see situations for me where it's like, I don't have a strong reaction really, because we've heard thousands of times, and admittedly, I have kind of been one of those people to say this a lot, that E3 is dead, and then now it comes back, and then it goes again, and all of its faults, all the great things to come from E3, the fact, like you said about social media, with social media, what it is today, it doesn't have the same feeling when something gets announced, you know? I don't know. E3's just got to figure out where it fits in a 2023 landscape. And I'm wondering where they think that is.
Yeah, it's interesting because they don't have the monopoly on information anymore. So, you know, I don't understand what the point is of bringing it back under the same name, at least. You know, if they're going to switch it to a more enthusiast, fan focused kind of thing. First of all, I don't really know what that looks like for video games as much as I can understand what that looks like for other forms of media. I mean, there's probably going to be booths of playing games and maybe other merchants that are selling video game related stuff like statues and books and whatever. Like, that could be one route that they go. But why? I guess E3 has a name, but like, it has cash or cachet or whatever in people's minds. But when people think of E3, they usually think of the E3 of 20 years ago, basically. And it hasn't been that for a long time. So, you know, why bring it back under that name? I don't understand exactly. But, you know, and also, I guess the fact that ReadPop even took on shows that they at least have some sort of faith in being able to, you know, bring it back in an interesting way. So, you know, we'll see.
Well, I think you brought it up right there, Riley. The reason to bring it back is because it has that name brand. E3 of yesteryear was something that every gamer dreams of. Even now, a lot of gamers still dream of going to E3. So to just throw away E3, I don't think it's a great idea. But I would totally understand if they're like, hey, E3's no more. We have all these other shows. But there's still a need and a want for physical, in-person events. All right, so now we can get into our main topic, which, let's face it, E3, we could have kept going with that one. Ooh, that could have been our main topic. But we got something a bit more with controversy involved in it. Ubisoft has finally shown off Skull and Bones gameplay presentation. We finally have a new look at the long in development Skull and Bones. The 1 hour plus presentation showed off a cinematic trailer, a gameplay overview, and a gameplay demonstration. Moreover, it was revealed that Skull and Bones will be released on November 8th, 2022 for PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Also, when it comes to cloud gaming, Stadia and Luna. It's interesting to note that Skull and Bones is dropping a day before God of War Ragnarok releases. All right, let's talk about the demo. Taylor, what did you make of this?
I know what all three of us think about this presentation, and it's going to be an interesting conversation. I think initially, okay, it's complicated, all right? This is very complicated, because I wanted to watch the gameplay. I didn't have time to watch everything, all right? I didn't watch the cinematics. I'm going to be honest with you, I can kind of care less about the cinematic, especially when there's gameplay involved. I'm obviously going to go for the gameplay. So I watched all the gameplay. Now, the first gameplay overview, where they're showing you the voiceover for what you can do and all that stuff, I was very optimistic about it. I was like, all right, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's... It's Ubisoft, so you look at an Ubisoft game and you start to recognize a lot of things. And I don't think that's too far off here, too. But still, I kind of enjoyed it. I was like, all right, there's potential here. The Sea of Thieves-like game here. And then I saw the other part of the gameplay. And then I realized, oh, so in combat, you can't get off the ship at all. You can't go plunder with your crewmates. There's just a cutscene where they're plundering. And then you can't board another ship. There's just a cutscene where your crewmates are boarding the ship. Oh, fuck.
Oh, wait.
That's all this game is.
Yeah, I'll do one worse. You don't even see the plundering part. It's just them jumping off the ship, and it cuts right back to the ship. It's like, what?
There's a lot of this I did genuinely like. But at the end of the day, it's going to sound really bad, because this game's been in development for fucking years. But it still doesn't look finished. It kind of, to me, just my personal feeling, it feels like Ubisoft was just like, we gotta push this out here. We're not spending any more money on it. Alright, we're just gonna push it out this year. That's what it kind of feels like to me. And it's sad, because I think there's potential in this. And last thing before I let it go, I saw this post on Twitter about it. Saw someone say this online, to where they were like, all you had to do was essentially take out the assassin stuff in Assassin's Creed 4 and just throw it into Skull and Bones and add on to it from there. And I'm like, you know, yeah, that's really all you had to do. The ship combat's great. That's very Assassin's Creed 4-like, but other than that, there's not much I really loved. What did you guys think?
So we're gonna go ahead and let Riley do this, because, man, Riley, we've been bullying you this whole episode, but this is gonna take the cake. So go ahead, please.
Yeah, I think I only watched the like 7 or 8 minute voiceover demo, and I guess I didn't realize that there is no.
So like, Riley, hold on, before you go into your whole thing here. If you could click on the video I have in our outline, I guess you can just mute it. That way, while you're talking, you can at least see what I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna watch that. Hang on. But I initially was... Oh yeah, this is what I watched. Yeah. I definitely watched that. But I'm pretty excited about this game. I mean, it looks just like Assassin's Creed 4, which makes sense because it was basically based off of Assassin's Creed 4. I think Ubisoft has come out and said that. And forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think that the game initially started development almost right after Assassin's Creed 4, or maybe when, you know, soon after Assassin's Creed 4 came out and Ubisoft realized that they had kind of a... something of substance with Assassin's Creed 4 that was separate from what makes Assassin's Creed itself popular.
At some point, wasn't this like a For Honor 4v4 thing? Am I imagining that, or?
I don't know about that. The story that I understand is something akin of... First of all, Assassin's Creed 4 started off as its own kind of game, but they spun that off into the fourth AC game. And then they wanted to do something, you know, kind of branching off of that, but, you know, the plans for Assassin's Creed are probably set in motion, you know, so they, you know, years before, so they can't really make a sequel to that game exactly. So they wanted to spin it off into its own game, which, if that's all correct, what I'm saying, which I think it is, like, that's what I remember from this story, but it would make sense why it looks the way it looks, because it looks exactly like Assassin's Creed 4, which, to be fair, that is, you know, at this point, an old game. So, you know, I understand the hesitancy with how it looks, but in terms of ship combat, in terms of, you know, different ship types and armor types and being able to retrofit your ship how you want and taking on different missions and things, those parts look really compelling and engaging to me. I guess I didn't think about the fact that you're not going to be able to, or at least from what they showed, you're not able to basically board the other ships and, you know, swing from ship to ship and things like that, like you were able to do in Assassin's Creed 4. But to me, that's kind of a small... It's not that big of a deal, right? To me, this game is really about the ship combat more than anything else. And, you know, I'm pretty... I think for me, I have such fond memories playing Assassin's Creed 4. And I haven't played it since it came out, basically. And this game just gives me memories of that. And... you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And while y'all are playing God of War, I'm going to be playing Skull and Bones. What did you think, Michael?
Oh, Riley. You're going to get kicked off the show a third time with this nonsense.
How dare you have a different opinion? Gosh, Riley. It's not like this is a podcast where all three of us have very different opinions on things.
For me, I was looking forward to Skull and Bones. Like I said, when I last saw it, it was at E3. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah, as many times this game has been pushed back and delayed, it seems kind of weird that this is all we're getting. I know that sounds very entitled of me. But yeah, right, like you said, like it really does have that Assassin's Creed Black Flag deal going for it, because it was a spinoff of that. But they took out the things that also made it fun, like raiding castles and plundering and all that cool stuff. Instead, the only thing they took was the docks. You can go to the docks and recruit people and do upgrades. It's like, oh, okay, that's still kind of stupid, but sure. So I can jump out the boat and board other boats and take over pirate boats and other frigates, right? No, you don't. You're the captain. The captain always stays with the ship. It's like, oh, okay.
Now, here's a question I have for you, Michael and Riley, both of you. Was there any part of the entire gameplay overview? Because I know that there were two people playing at the end of the presentation. They were not on the same ship, correct?
Yeah, no, they were doing co-op with different ships.
Yeah, is there any way that you can do co-op on the same ship? Because it didn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, it didn't really seem that way. But I can say that Ubisoft at least said that it'd be PvP. I'm sorry, not PvP, but PvE and PvEVP. So at least you get the options of not dealing with people. But yeah, the co-op, it really does seem like you're two different captains who are teaming up to make, like, I guess, a team or something. Because, the developers, the whole time, they were always separate. They were able to run on the island together and accept contracts. But... They didn't show if the contract was only for, like, the host or that one player, or if both players benefited from that. So, yeah, that is kind of strange.
I actually prefer that, I think. just because, I don't know, like, the coordination effort in, you know, having one person steer the ship, having another, like, real person man the guns and all that, like, that just seems like a headache that I don't want to deal with. The fact that, like, I can play with my friend and, like, they can do something completely, like, on their own ship, and, like, worry about themselves while I worry about myself, like, that's perfect for me. So.
I agree, but also kind of think the best course of action would have been having the option, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know how that worked mechanic-wise. That might have been too much, you know, to where it just wouldn't have fit in terms of what they were going for game design-wise. So that's not something I'm going to completely rag the game for. That's kind of like what we were talking about last week, Michael, with design choices. Like, it was a design choice. I'm not a big fan of it, but I kind of get it, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it would have been a logistic nightmare, especially online-wise, to have two players doing it. Yeah, and who knows, maybe they tried that, and that's one of the reasons why it's been delayed so long, so they really wanted to get that social two-player co-op deal going on. That's a big thing for Ubisoft, is everything's got to be social, it's got to be online, players got to be able to work together, and blah, 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 and I think we're really going to see that with Skull and Bones, because they made that a big deal. It's like, hey, two players, and you can grift other players. They say you can fight them, but let's face it, we already know what people are going to get, like, a team of their friends together and just going around grifting other players.
Yeah. The way that Ubisoft put it in the presentation, I was like, that was the nicest way to say that griefing.
It really was.
I'm not ragging on Ubisoft for that either. I'm just like, I'm surprised they came up with the nicest way to say that. Like, good job.
How long do you think they were sitting in the meeting room trying to figure out a way of saying it without actually saying it?
Because, no, on paper, that's what it should be. It's like, oh, you can engage in PvP if you want to. But in execution, you know, gamers, whenever, you know, we're in these games and stuff, a lot of players are kind of assholes.
Yeah, I agree. It's something that I said last week, like, gamers can be dicks. Like, oh, you give them that kind of power, you better believe that. They didn't really show how many players can join at once, like, in a group. It might just be, like, a two-player, four-player thing. But you can have multiple ships in your solo player side. So I wonder if you can have solo player, multiple ships, and then your friend comes in with their ships, and you're like, you have, like, this armada. I don't know how they're going to handle that, or if it's just going to be you and a friend. Because they did show one section where there was, like, 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 players going at it at once. I was like, I don't know who's on whose team, but the point that all these players are in, like, this circle jerk of blowing each other up with cannons, I'm like, that's going to be the game on day one. Like, that's all people are going to do.
Also, here's one thing, though, because we're looking at what it could be potentially the worst aspect of it, like a meta and people griefing. It also depends on community a bit, you know? There's a lot of games out there that could be very terrible, very toxic and all that stuff, but its community is very fucking positive. I think, I don't know this for sure, but Sea of Thieves is one I think a lot of people are surprisingly pretty positive. You don't see a ton of crazy PvP griefing there. No Man's Sky, there's a lot of helpful people there. And there's a lot of games, I think, with a great community. So this might be one of them too. We'll have to figure out, you know, in November whenever the game comes out.
That's so nice. You're trying to be optimistic about that.
Well, it's very possible, though. That's what I'm saying.
It's a Ubisoft game.
It is, but still, we don't know what community this game's going to get. We don't know who's going to buy this game.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Taylor. Michael, if you look at, I think, like, Riders Republic, that's a Ubisoft game, and I think their community is pretty, gentle.
What? Watch what we're wrong about both of these, and Sea of Thieves and Riders Republic are just, like, two of the most toxic communities out there. They're just sending death threats to people. Just like, oh shit, we were wrong about those.
I mean, I hope you guys are right. I mean, I would like to see more games that have social aspect to them have actual communities with them. But, like, again, you're able to play a pirate. Pirates aren't really the nicest people in the world. So people are really going to take that role seriously. And they're going to be all like, oh, I'm a pirate. Like, oh, I'm going to do whatever I want. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, jeez Louise, man. This is it. This is gonna be day one, year one, and for the rest of this game service. Because I'm pretty sure Ubisoft is making this a live service. Did they say it was gonna be live service?
I think it's kind of implied, isn't it?
I think every game that's not like a linear experience now, it's implied that somehow it's gonna be a live service.
Yeah.
Oh, Ubisoft. Oh.
That man. Word has kind of lost its meaning in a way.
Yeah. It
because
has.
Like every online game is gonna get updates, so what do you mean?
Yeah. And maybe that's why they didn't explicitly say it's gonna be a live service game, but it's weird because Ubisoft, you know, I've admitted this before. At least they keep up with their live service games. Like you guys brought up what was it? For Honor.
The Division 2.
Yeah. Even the Crew 2 still gets updates. They just received an update not too long ago.
They will shut down games though. Look at Breakpoint. It didn't work. They just had development on it. Like, it's just how it is. I feel like Michael is very down on this game. Riley is very positive on this game. I feel like the person kind of trapped in the middle, leaning towards Michael's point of view. Also because I played a lot of Ubisoft games, and just me personally, there's things that I see in every Ubisoft game that I wish somebody in the creative team would be like, or at least somebody in the board of directors, the creative minds that approve these things go, so how about we make a completely new game? And you know, what I mean actually, by that is no more Ubisoftisms.
When you say that it looks like a Ubisoft game, oddly enough, that UI is a mess. And it makes it look like you have 601 things to do. Yet when they showed the game, it really didn't seem like they were doing the typical Ubisoft thing where they have 600 things scrolled on a map. It looked like they toned it down. Like, you think they're going to keep that? Or do you think that's just like too early to tell that before they start putting dots and icons on everything?
I think sometimes when people go, the UI is a mess or the HUD's a mess, sometimes it takes to where you get your hands on the game. And then you realize, okay, it was necessary for all this stuff to be on the HUD for this kind of game. Or, yeah, it is just a cluttered clusterfuck of a UI. So I think that's going to depend, too, whenever people get their hands on the game. Again, my whole thing about Skull and Bones, from what we saw from this whole presentation, and I watched, again, the entire gameplay, the gameplay overview, and the gameplay demonstration at the end. There's a lot of promise there, but at the end of the day, it's just a bunch of meh. And that's kind of how I feel about Ubisoft games right now, to where they're trying to feel so samey with things.
Did you see the logo for Skull and Bones?
I saw some talk about it. I don't think it's that big a deal. People were like, oh, the old logo is so much better.
It's so strange. I saw that logo, and I thought it was like a loading icon. I was like, oh no, that's the actual logo. And I bring that up because you said that Ubisoftism, that icon just reminded me, like, maybe I'm playing The Division again. Like, it looks like something that came off of The Division. I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah, you're right. Even like some of their logos and their fonts, it really feels like a Ubisoft thing.
Yeah, it really doesn't fit, does it?
No, it reminded me of like they were bringing out a free-to-play Tom Clancy game. I forgot what it was called. But it looked like it belonged to that game. And it somehow made its way over to... Yeah.
What was it called? Tom Clancy's...
Yeah, it was like XD or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like a first-person shooter that was... I don't know.
Yeah, it felt like it belonged in that game. And I was like, that does not fit. But yeah, you're right. Ubisoft does have this... Ubinism, and it's like, oh my goodness, that's why that logo didn't fit right with me. And yeah, you're right, Ubisoft does have this problem where everything feels the same. Oh my goodness.
And the thing is, for me too, the biggest problem this game has is releasing a day before God of War Ragnarok. Granted, God of War Ragnarok is a PlayStation exclusive. That said, it is going to make I think this is the scientific term for it. It's going to make a fuck ton of money. It's going to sell a fuck ton of copies. So I'm wondering how that's going to impact Ubisoft's Skull and Bones here. I don't know how this is going to work. It seems like it's doomed to fail because of where they put it.
I think they put it there on purpose, perhaps.
But the thing is, you are capturing on a untapped audience. People want a pirate game. And I hate to say it, but not the same people, a majority of the same people who are playing God of War is going to play Skull and Bones. And a lot of the people who are going to play Skull and Bones on PlayStation, like Riley, probably weren't going to get God of War Ragnarok anyway. So for them, they kind of get like they kind of get that win that week anyway.
Yeah, I am that person.
Yeah, I think it's just gonna be interesting though with everybody else though. That's what I'm saying. I don't know how this is gonna work sales wise, because there is the potential. You're right, Michael, that people are gonna end up buying this game regardless, just because, oh, I'm not a big fan of God of War, the direction they took it, or I don't have a PlayStation right now, I want to wait till I get a PlayStation 5, or I know somebody who has a PC that really wants to get Ragnarok, but they're going to wait till it comes out on PC. So you have all these different kind of players, and they're not going to be able to get Ragnarok at launch. Are they going to still shell out money the day before for a game like Skull and Bones?
Yeah.
And I kind of still don't think that's going to be the case.
I do think that I don't think they're targeting the general kind of big gaming audience. Like, of course they want as many people playing their game, but I see this game as kind of more of a niche kind of thing. And
more like for Skull and Bone. I mean, more like for like people who enjoyed Sea of Thieves. Like, this is definitely like a game that people are going to stream a lot.
So, yeah, I think it's like a niche thing. I think Ubisoft kind of is going for that, just and also the game has been developed for so long that at this point, like, it's been in development for so long that at this point the game is what it is, and you know, they might as well release it, right? Like, I don't think they're gonna do a huge push to be like, hey, this is a game of the year contender, this is what everybody should be playing, but I think it's more of, like, kind of like what Michael was saying, of just, if you're at least semi-curious, you know, come along and pick this game up, I guess. Like, I don't think Ubisoft even themselves have great predictions about how the game is gonna do.
Alright, so let's go ahead and get out of here. Riley, what did you play last weekend?
I've been playing a bunch of different things, but I suppose the most interesting one, or the one that I've been playing the most, is actually another Paradox Interactive game. So if you've listened to me on this podcast before, you'll know I talked about Crusader Kings 3, which I really enjoy, and it's like a grand strategy game where you're juggling 20 different things at once. So one of my friends got me into their World War II game, Hearts of Iron 4, and I have played 10 hours of the game so far, according to Steam, and I still have no idea what the hell I'm doing at all. Trying to turn Britain communist. I was not successful in my first or second attempt at doing that, but yeah, the great thing about the game is, like, World War II always, like, it will break out pretty much all the time. But there's a lot of cool alt history stuff that you can do. I've been playing that.
Taylor, what did you play last weekend?
I have not been playing too much, as I talked about earlier. I had a mini burnout session on a lot of things. And not only that, just been swamped too. I don't think that helped things. Luckily, I'm at the other end of the tunnel on that, so that's pretty good. But what have you been playing this past
week? As for me, I've actually been going through a couple of things on my Steam account. I went back and played Lost Ark. I finally tried Lost Ark out. Not a huge fan. It's okay, but it's not a huge fan. I also played a game called Beasties, this Pokemon Light Match 3 game. I'm a sucker for Match 3, as I'm sure a lot of people know on this podcast. And that was also a little man, but I'll talk about that some other time. But I've also been playing Match Point Tennis Championships. So I'm doing a deal with that. So that was my weekend. But what about this weekend? Riley, what are you playing this weekend?
Yeah, I'll probably be playing more Hearts of Iron. Maybe I'll play Mass Effect. Might do it.
What do you mean? Wait, what do you make it sound like you're threatening us with, like, don't make me do it. I'll do it. Don't push me over the edge.
I might do it.
I might play one of the best franchises ever made. Just saying.
Well, we'll see how I feel. Yeah.
Taylor, what are you playing this weekend?
I'm not going to be playing too much, but I will say, Riley, if you need any lore explanations about Mass Effect, just let me know. I have helped out a few friends who have been getting into Mass Effect whenever they have a question like, oh, what is this character? Where are they from? And all this stuff. And then I'll give an explanation, and then by the end of it, they're just like, all right, well, you played through this game a few times, haven't you? So it's not to the level of a few people I know in Star Wars, but it's getting pretty close. I don't know how to feel about that, to be honest with you. It might be a problem. It might be something that's just a great skill. But just let me know.
They should hire you next.
Hey, BioWare, if you would love to hire me, you know where to find me on this podcast. We can do the job interview live on air.
Oh, man, I would be down for that. As for myself, I will be playing some more Horizon. I still haven't finished Horizon. I've been so busy with other stuff that I still haven't been able to finish the game that I really enjoyed. And so I'll be playing that a little bit throughout this weekend. And also, I think that might be it for me, actually. I want to say I'm not going to be playing anything else, but let's face it, I'm going to end up playing something else. But for right now, I'm still playing Horizon. All right, so Riley, last bit. What are you working on, and where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm not working on much. I'm working on this podcast. Working on learning Hearts of Iron 4. You can find me in the Discord.
You can also find me in the Discord and on this podcast here, or our other podcast called Nerds Talk Movies, where we do retrospectives or spoiler talks on various movies and television shows. And we're going to be coming up here shortly doing a spoiler talk on Thor Love and Thunder. It'll probably be just Tristan and Drew, but it should be a lot of fun. I'm going to go see the movie on Sunday, and I peeked at what people were thinking about it. I barely saw a Rotten Tomatoes score, and I'm concerned. So I hope it's really good. I love talking
about it. Isn't it like at a 69?
Nice. But that's not actually a good thing. That kind of sucks. But I hope it's good. All right. I love Taika Waititi. He's one of my favorite directors. I love the Thor franchise and what they've done with the character. So I hope Love and Thunder ends up being a success. I'm just very concerned by briefly seeing a Rotten Tomatoes score. This is what my life has become.
But as for me, I am going to be working on my digs towards Riley and Taylor throughout the rest of this year when it comes to this podcast. I will always be there to mess with them. That's going to be my favorite pastime right now. But I am working on my stream on Twitch. A couple days ago, I tried using a webcam for the first time. Did not go too well. I had audio issues, and it was so much fun streaming for 2 hours with no sound. So I'm still working on that. But I'm also working on my first live review stream, which is what I'm going to be doing with Match Point Tennis Championship. So you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/foxdaddy with the O being a zero. You can also find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. If you find a weirdo in a fox hoodie, congratulations, you're in the right place. All right, time for us to get out of here. But first, our Discord. Come join us. That's the best way to get in touch with us, at least for now. Riley will be there. You can make fun of Riley for all of her life choices when it comes to video games. You can also make fun of Taylor for all of his life choices when it comes to movies. And you can say how great I am, because let's face it, I'm the best thing about this podcast. And please consider dropping us a rating. It helps out tremendously. And finally, check out thenerdstash.com, where you can find all kinds of fun goodies, from reviews, previews about TV shows, movies, and video games, along with guides to help you get out of that little corner that you might be stuck in. All right, so thanks to Riley and Taylor for joining in, and thank you all for listening, whether this is your first time or your 600th time. Please share this with your friends and trap them in our mystical ways. Riley and I will be back next week to talk about some more gaming news.